Hey, good morning. 3 minutes after the hour of nine, you're tuned to your community station, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7, right here on the FM band. My name's Marlena Smith. I'm here with Eddie Goldberg. We're here to do some political analysis, some examination of the interface between politics and culture. And then at 10 o'clock, our good friend Martine Prechtel will be in town to visit with us live in the studio. And he'll give us a kind of a traditional grounded kind of analysis of what's going on in the world, which will be a different kind of analysis about the same kinds of things that Eddie and I will be talking about. So you get very different kinds of perspectives on what's happening in the world. What we just listened to, Randy Newman, of course, God's Song, That's Why I Love Mankind, from the Randy Newman Songbook, Volume 1, pretty powerful stuff. And I want to let you know this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing and Gazelle Full Circle Resale. Full Circle is now accepting like-new natural fiber clothing, jewelry, accessories, and curios. Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of 41 and Fremont in Northeast Portland and can be reached at 503-284-4192. Okay, let's see if I can do the magic and find Mr. Eddie here on the line. Eddie,
hello, hello, hello.
Keep talking because I don't know which one of these is.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And then, I am here, and so are we.
Okay, I got the right mic. See, I always have to play around with that.
Okay.
Eddie, let me just do my little astrology update.
Yo.
Okay, excuse me. Something about the morning wake-up time. We've been through some real heavy stuff, a lot of energy moving around. We just had a full moon at the beginning of the month, and two pretty tricky weeks. We just had a new moon this week, which should open the door to some changes. Got a lot of tricky energy coming through consistently. And a lot of it is, interestingly, energy that's affecting Mr. Bush, because it's hitting the generation of 1946, the kids, the post-war, first crowd in the post-war baby boom. And I guess, I'll just go right back to Eddie. I guess Mr. Bush really is feeling, that's all I'm going to say about astrology, but I guess Mr. Bush is really getting kind of pummeled, isn't he, Eddie?
Well, have you seen the look on his face lately? It's gone from the petulant child look that he usually had when he didn't get his way to someone who really looks like he's been punished. And this guy, you know, I didn't think that he was ever going to show any of the effects of the presidency. His hair got a little grayer in the 6 years we've known him. But it occurred to me that he was a guy that was so detached from the actual rigors of being president. But it turns out that's not true any longer. I think he feels like he's been stabbed in the back by the Republicans in Congress, the ones who are calling for Alberto Gonzalez's resignation, mm-hmm. the ones who are like Chuck Hagel, who are saying, hey, this war should be over. Let's get out of there. He expects loyalty, and he gives loyalty. His loyalty to Gonzalez and Wolfowitz is disgusting. I mean, it's weird. But he expects it in return, and I think he's feeling betrayed.
Well, on a deeper psychological level, he is a person with a history of chemical dependency. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
We also know that he hasn't had the kind of treatment that the medical or scientific community would deem reasonable. So in some circles, he would be called a dry drunk, for example. People like that who have a lot of unresolved issues, and he's using this kind of addiction to faith for whatever value that has or whatever reality is involved, but he's kind of using an alternative addiction to sort of get himself through this. So here's a guy who, because he hasn't really gone through any kind of treatment, is very much into blaming. So he's always going to blame other people. He's not going to take responsibility. He's a guy who hasn't learned the importance of being honest and telling the truth. So he's always making up stories. These are sort of the characteristics. And then he's kind of enmeshed. I mean, we call it loyalty, but on a deeper level, what he is enmeshed with Gonzalez. I mean, they have a relationship that is so interdependent because of their mutual history, needs, et cetera, that it's almost impossible for him to break that. And then, of course, on top of that is the concern that there are so many secrets that Gonzalez has a level of power also that Bush can't violate.
Now, isn't Gonzalez the last member of the Texas Mafia that he came with Bush from the governorship of Texas?
Mm-hmm.
There was Karen What's-Her-Face who went back to spend more time with her family or whatever mm-hmm. it is.
And then became the roving diplomat to the world.
Yeah, exactly. But not there on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
There's even a distancing from Condoleezza Rice lately, who maybe has decided finally that she hitched her wagon to the wrong star. And now Alberto Gonzalez, who is in so much trouble and it has a history of such malfeasance and misfeasance, mm-hmm. that he's going to have to be dumped overboard too. And I think here we have Bush on an island alone with the sharks swimming around him.
Mm-hmm. Well, Gonzalez is on that same island. I mean, the
only for a while.
Yeah, well, you know, some people are saying maybe he'll take Wolfowitz's job over at the World Bank. Maybe
that'll
be a good place to
shifting incompetence.
Yeah, well, isn't that the way it works?
Yeah, I guess it's like taking
the Peter principle,
taking a pedophile priest and moving him to another parish, figuring it'll go away there.
Right, you bring people up, you elevate people to the level of their highest incompetence.
Yeah, Peter principle. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the right. That's exactly what it is. Well, you know, the news, you and I haven't talked for a little bit of time here. At least a couple months have gone by, and there's been so much that's gone on in the news that our political analysis, when I was putting the show together last night and thinking about this conversation, I was getting kind of really psyched up because there's so much juicy stuff going on now. And the reason it's extra juicy is because the Democrats are on the ascendant, and the activity in the Congress is almost mind-boggling. Well, it is mind-boggling, and the only thing that's holding them back from full throttle is the fact that they still have to overcome some of those Republican votes in the Senate, but the House is just kicking butt.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I think Peter DeFazio from the Eugene area and Earl Blumenauer from Portland's, what, 3rd District,
mm-hmm.
were both asked to sort of jump in the ring against Gordon Smith.
And they won't do it.
And they don't want to do it because they're having such a
good
much time.
Too much fun. That's right.
So this morning I heard a guy from, I think, Ashland, Medford, somewhere around there, a doctor, Vietnam vet, who's in the State House, and his name escapes me because I only heard it once. But he's thinking about jumping in the ring against Gordon Smith. And that would be interesting because this week in the vote to that Feingold, what was that vote tell me.
I'm blanking on it. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, I think it was the vote to withhold funds until
next spring. Oh, that's
right.
Spring. Yeah.
And Gordon Smith voted with the majority against the resolution. Interestingly, all the people running for president on the Democratic side all voted against continuation of funding for the war. So that was good. And that we're beginning to see where the lines are kind of being drawn. Gordon Smith fell down on the wrong side, even though for a moment there he appeared to be beholden to more progressive ideology.
Gordon Smith is a work in progress. I sit back and I look at Gordon Smith and I can't decide whether this guy is for real or whether he's the most cynical politician I've ever seen in my life, excluding, of course, Richard Nixon. But if he's really undergoing a personal transformation, which is not unknown, you know, these things have happened before, then I say more power to him. If this is just a cynical attempt to make himself look a little more blue in a very, very blue state, people in Oregon are not going to turn this guy out because he's a Republican. They're going to turn him out because they don't like what he's doing. And as long as they like what he's doing, even a little bit, you know, the incumbents usually win.
Well, point taken. And, opportunism is the word that jumps into my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I remember when he was in the State House and some of us went down to Salem to lobby for something that we were trying to get through. And he was just bored and he was dismissive, and he held up a cartoon to present his point of view, and I thought, what a jerk.
Mm.
I mean, I don't like saying that about somebody on the air, but, you know, that was my impression. I'm just telling the truth.
Well, yeah, that's why. I mean, I've worked with Earl Blumenauer on a couple of issues. I mean, I'm not a friend of his or anything like that, but I've had occasion to work with the congressman, and I find him to be open and interested in what you have to say, and I mean, he's not perfect, but he certainly
right.
has a really good outlook on where this country should be going and where Oregon should be going. He would have been a great candidate, maybe even better than DeFazio.
Mm-hmm.
DeFazio, I think, is maybe less electable than Earl would have been. But the fact is, they ain't running. I mean, it's like DeFazio said, I don't want to spend the rest of my life raising money every day to stay in office.
Right.
And, you know, number two is I'm having too much fun doing what I'm doing now.
Right, and Earl Blumenauer has a long track record of working with transportation issues and alternative transportation and has a great deal of value where he's located. I remember when the MAX first opened and you had to go down and register to get your bicycle on MAX and on the buses and stuff, which I did. It was a Saturday afternoon, and I was taking my bike somewhere, and I jumped on the MAX, which you could do with your pass, and he was jogging in the neighborhood, and while I was waiting for the MAX, he came up to me and said, how is this working? And I thought, that's a pretty good barometer for a guy to use, just to hang out in town on a weekend, talk to people using the system and get feedback. And I thought, that's pretty solid.
Yeah, yeah.
And that always impressed me about Blumenauer, that he was kind of on the ground and actually talking to real people about how things were working, instead of, you know, getting a bunch of heads together or paying consultants.
He's a creative guy. And the other thing is he's got a really excellent chief of staff. He has good people working for him, and that's very, very important, because they funnel the issues to the guy that he has to think about. He's too busy to be his own doorkeeper. Mm-hmm. So a chief of staff is a very important job for these people.
Okay, well, let's go to the war in Iraq.
Is there one?
Yeah, I heard something interesting this week, a reminder of what's going on the ground. So I want to start there, and we can move backwards or forward or sideways. Mike Malloy, who's on Air America now in the evening again, was talking about the reality that Iraq has been the victim of 13 years of military conflagration, sponsored by guess who?
Mm-hmm.
And not unlike Kosovo, these depleted uranium-tipped weapons have been used. It was a reminder that this land is destroyed probably for 200,000, 250,000 years. I mean, this land has literally been ruined. So you don't want to get into buying, you know, produce from Iraq once things settle down. Or eating it. That got me thinking about the soldiers who are on the ground. And then a story popped up this week about Gulf War veterans having been exposed to sarin gas. They think as many as 100,000 were exposed to sarin gas and cyclosarin, and that this has the potential to create problems in brain processing and brain activity, and that this could explain a lot of the physical and psychological problems they're having. And then I thought of this group of soldiers who are in Iraq now who keep getting redeployed, or who keep getting sent back into the field, and these National Guard people who are going in for incredibly long runs. They're even having problems with divorce now and all kinds of stuff that nobody ever thought of. And I thought, there's got to be a reason why they want to keep using the same guys over and over. And it occurred to me that part of that is these are the guys we know who are having an incredible number of brain injuries because of lack of helmets and protection. I thought, okay, so they're exposed to depleted uranium. They're getting massive head injuries. They didn't have enough armor to start with. They're in an incredibly tainted region. It's almost like they wanted to keep this group isolated and not bring in outsiders or flush the troops with new, different blood. And it just made me wonder if there wasn't some kind of sinister, covert peace playing out. And I hate to go in that direction, but, you know, you got to ask the question.
Well, that's speaking of cynicism, if you look at the issue from an abstract level, and you say, okay, we have radiation in the ground, we have possible contamination with nerve gas. If we bring in fresh troops, all we're going to do is increase the number eventually that will wind up with bizarre cancers and mental illness and physical problems. So let's keep the same group and keep rotating them, thereby minimizing the effect in sheer numbers. It'll make it worse for the people who are there and their families, but they don't care about that anyway, do they?
Well, you know, I don't think they care about anything, if I could be perfectly, perfectly honest.
Money and power.
I mean, I think the contempt that they have, not only for the soldiers who are doing their work, basically, but they also have contempt for the Constitution. They have contempt for democratic processes. They have contempt for all of us. I guess their fantasy scenario is to retire to Dubai, where nobody can touch them. And maybe that's where they'll all end up, you know, Cheney and Gonzalez and Bush. Maybe they'll all just get on a jet and get out of here. And that would be okay as long as, you know, they weren't in charge here anymore. But they've done so much damage along the way. They've deconstructed so many institutional settings. I mean, small things show up. There was a story this morning about trucks. Somebody did an evaluation, a spot check, random check of trucks on freeways. And something like 80% of them out of 52 some trucks all had hideous safety violations, you know, anything from ball tires to bad brakes. And I thought, that is the kind of thing you see when government institutions break down. And people, you know, libertarians, of course, think everything can be done by the market. But there are so many things that government agencies do and have done well that are in complete collapse now.
Well, I do know that a union truck driver will never leave the yard with a load If the tires are in a good shape, if the brakes are in a good shape, if the power steering is in a good shape, they do a complete check every time they get into that truck. They even go around with, they have a little stick that they go around and beat on the tires with. And if they don't sound right, they ask for that tire to be replaced. There is a checklist that they go through. The thing about Mexican truckers, you know about this thing about Mexican truckers,
right.
That they want to give truck drivers from Mexico complete and total access.
They're already doing it.
So what that does is it says, okay, this is not only, it has, you know, a couple of benefits. First of all, it's a union killer, number one. Second of all, these truck drivers work really, really cheap. But the intended consequence, I wouldn't go that far, but certainly one of the consequences is you have a bunch of undertrained, overworked drivers driving significantly damaged or safety violated vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Well, union busting, yeah. And I remember reading a story not too long ago that these trucks coming in from Mexico can get as far as Kansas City without even being checked at customs.
Yes.
So now, they're riding on freeways north across North America without any checks. And that really makes you wonder what's coming in on those trucks. What is there contraband? Does anybody know?
Does Homeland Security know?
Gee whiz.
Hmm.
Well, I don't know. But, you know, the important thing is that Mr. Bush reminded us once again, I am the commander guy.
Oh, yeah. He's the decider and the commander guy.
The commander guy.
Isn't he something? He's. You know, I used to think that his father was inarticulate, but apparently the Prescott Bush was a very articulate man. George H.W. Bush was had his foot in his mouth, but George W. Bush, there's no connection between his brain and his tongue, apparently.
So what kind of suit does he wear under his suit? To be the commander guy, what would that suit look
like?
Because I want to wear that for Halloween.
I would guess for him it would be something like an Opus Dei guy would wear with the fish hooks in it. But I don't know. It's
commander guy.
What was it that Shakespeare said? Upon what meat does Caesar feed? You know, what is motivating this guy? What keeps him going?
He's so damaged.
He's damaged. But it's that, you know, that doesn't explain it, mm-hmm. really. It's a symptom rather than an explanation.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at this guy and I'm just waiting for all the spate of books to come out from all the people who were freed out from under his thumb. It's already happening, and you know, mm-hmm. I mean, there have been a bunch of anti-Bush books from people who worked with him. But I expect a cottage industry of tell-all books about this administration. I just wish it would happen now.
Well, if you remember Dr. Justin Frank, the psychiatrist who did the book Bush on the Couch, one of the conclusions that we discussed right on this show was the possibility that he's just a straight-ahead sociopath. And these are people who feel no remorse. They don't have any guilt. They just have no connection to how other people feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that could be the worst possible scenario.
That's pretty tough, though. You
it
know,
is
that's...
tough, but it's a. I mean, according to Justin Frank, it was one you couldn't rule out yet.
Mm-hmm. Hey, listen, a little point of personal privilege here. We talked about something a few months ago, and it kind of got beat under the rug because we skipped onto something right away. It was the impeachment thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people talking about impeachment. I'm seeing the bumper stickers certainly here in Portland. You know, my next door neighbor has a yard sign about impeachment. And I said, nobody should talk about impeachment. You should just look at the evidence. And you said, oh, that's because you're a crime writer. Well, no, I have a real reason for this. So give me a minute here and hear me out. The reason that Watergate worked as well as it did was that nobody said anything about impeaching the president. Everybody was just investigating what was going on in the White House. Eventually, the Alexander Butterfield testimony popped up because they were trying to talk to everybody who had anything to do with the Oval Office. And then we found out about the taping system. And then we got the tapes in. And then we had the Supreme Court versus the White House about who was going to get the tapes and blah, blah, blah. But the point I'm making is it was like a district attorney building a case. You do not, if you say what the outcome of your research is going to be at the end, you have damaged research because it's tendentious. It's heading toward a point. We should just develop the evidence, because the more evidence you develop about this thing, about the corruption, about the money grubbing, about the $8.8 billion that went missing, the more and more.
And the missing oil.
And the missing oil now, that 3 million gallons of barrels a day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's incredible. 3 million barrels of anything a day is an incredible amount.
And we're paying more, I think, and they're blaming it on refineries.
That's right. And it may be Saudi Arabia that's stealing the oil. Did you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is let the evidence show what it shows, and then the calls for impeachment will come. They'll rise up from the people, just like it happened with Watergate. Because what you need to do is let the people decide where the evidence is going, not say, we're going to impeach and here's why.
I totally agree with what you're saying in terms of letting the evidence speak. But that's what an impeachment really means. It means once you start impeachment proceedings, you now are doing the research. The Democrats under Harry Reid appear not to be going that direction. They are, however, doing everything they can to comply with your point, which is they're collecting a huge amount of data from the congressional investigations they're doing, which is monumental. I mean, you could write volumes about what's happened in the last couple, 3 months in terms of what they've uncovered.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that is an approach. But I think, you know, impeachment is also legitimate. And Jonathan Turley, interestingly, a constitutional scholar who's not a Democrat, said probably the most impeachable offense, the most obviously impeachable offense right now is the domestic wiretapping
case. Oh, without question.
And, well, let's talk about that. That
okay.
is the most hideous story. Do you want to tell people the story about the Ashcroft for those who might not already know?
Well, let's start
making
with the...
Making John Ashcroft look like a much better guy than we thought.
The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and in the 1970s, was it? I don't remember the exact date, but it's 1978 or something like that, yes. What it said was, we understand that there might be considerations of national security where you need to get wiretaps down really, really fast. So we're going to create a special court here. This is a FISA court. You come to the FISA court and ask for that, and we will expedite the Fourth Amendment view of this thing and get you a warrant as quickly as possible. In the event that you have an emergency situation, you have 72 hours. You can take 72 hours and wiretap for 72 hours before you get a FISA warrant. So this is like the easiest thing in the world. The number is about right. I'm making it up, but it's about right. About 15,000 FISA requests, fewer than 20 were turned down. So, I mean, that's such a minuscule percentage, it doesn't even exist. So you had this mechanism in place. Bush bypassed it completely. He didn't even bother to go to the FISA court. It's easier to get a warrant from the FISA court than it's easier to get money from an oil man these days.